50 is one of those magically round numbers, and so it's particularly thrilling that today I am putting up my 50th podcast. Yep, this is the 50th episode of the Frank Online Marketing Show, although I did have a couple of other little special editions, so I suppose technically it's more than 50, but whatever. My name is Temma Frank, and I am your host for this weekly look at online marketing and a bunch of related issues, things that you need to know in order to make your marketing really work in today's digital economy. One of the things that you should do to build a really strong podcast audience is have a really strong, consistent theme. And I have to confess, I've been wavering back and forth a little bit lately. Yes, I am every bit as fascinated as ever about online marketing, and certainly that is still at the core of what I do. But as you know from the last few episodes, I've also been interviewing everybody about process. And today's episode is more at the personal process level. When I came across Tom Morcus and his Art of Instigating book, along with a couple of other publications, it came at a very good time for me because I've really been struggling with I've got to admit, it's kind of a never-ending struggle to find better ways to focus and get the important things done, to, as Seth Godin would say, to be ready to ship and just do it. Tom is a huge Seth Godin fan and actually managed to get Seth's permission to write up a book that described a two-day seminar that he did with Seth Godin and to use Seth's name in the book title. So not surprisingly, that got off to a really great start and got Tom some great attention. What I found particularly intriguing was that he used a pay what you want model for the release of that book. That's something that I find very appealing, and we talk a lot in this interview about what is so magical about the pay what you want approach. If you've ever had any doubts about whether you're doing the right things or why you're not moving faster in your life or making more progress, I think you'll find today's interview of great interest. I will chat with you briefly after the interview.
I'm Tom Morcus. I'm an author, a publisher, and an all-around instigator. I started writing about a year ago consistently and have since written a couple books that I've self-published. And through that process, I've built a little bit of a platform for myself using a blog and built up an audience slowly but surely that's been increasing in size pretty quickly now as I'm getting more exposure. Mm-hmm. And with that little bit of a success that I've had in the beginning, I thought, well, why not expand this to help other people do the same thing and help them create their own sort of art? So I do that with Insurgent Publishing, which is my publishing company.
Okay.
And so right now I'm working with a bunch of authors to essentially bring to the world unique, really compelling art that would normally be either they wouldn't take action on, so they wouldn't actually publish it themselves, or if they publish it themselves, it would get ignored because they might not have a platform built up.
Right.
So I'm hoping to bridge that gap for the creative who has a lot of talent but doesn't necessarily have the blog set up or doesn't necessarily have the connections that many established bloggers do. And so that's kind of what I'm doing with Insurgent Publishing.
So what are some of the best approaches for people who are trying to build that audience in the first place? What do you tell people is the best way to start?
You know, to be honest with you, I think the best way to start is probably using some sort of blog. It's tough to argue with just the statistics behind it. The truth of the matter is I wouldn't have been able to sell any books if I didn't have a blog. I mean, maybe I could have, but it would have been really hard. I really can't think of a way I could have. And then even with my really small audience when I first started with the first book I released as a Pay What You Want product, 2 Days with Seth Godin, I had 166 subscribers at the time, mm-hmm. which is, it's minuscule, it's tiny.
Yep.
And from that, I made over $500 in the first month. And so you look at it's not a lot of money. I'm not going to retire off that, right?
But it's a great start.
But it's a great start. And it just, I think it goes to show the potential that's out there for people. You can obviously do the math and think, well, if I had, you know, twice as many subscribers or three times, and who knows, it would scale that way. But there's truth in those numbers. And it's the fact that, but I wouldn't have had those numbers if I had not started that blog, if I hadn't started communicating in that way, mm-hmm. and started writing for an audience.
Yeah.
And that's specifically for writers. And then for entrepreneurs, I think the same goes. And it's in the same vein. You need to be able to communicate directly with your with your customers, with your audience.
Yes.
If you want to be successful, that's the only thing. I mean, that's what I've seen. That's what I know. And mm-hmm. and there might be other ways around it, but none that I've experienced.
You know, it's interesting, and I've got a whole bunch of questions I want to ask you going off in different directions. But one of the things that strikes me is I think there are a lot of people, and I confess in a lot of ways I'm a bit like this myself, where I've got a bit of an audience both from my blog and my podcast. And for whatever reason, it's been really hard for me to take the step of actually putting something out there and trying to sell it, which is ridiculous because I've had a best-selling book in the past, but that was in the pre-internet era. How common is that, that you find that people who've sort of already started building an audience, but there's a blockage about taking that next step of trying to actually sell something to them?
Jeez, how common is that? It's interesting that you ask that, because as I'm talking to you right now, I'm in the middle of building a guide and kind of a course on showing people how to use Pay What You Want, which is the model
I wanted to ask about. I think that's brilliant. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so it kind of ties into that question, because I guess I'll backtrack and say that's what I used to start selling my stuff, because I thought to myself, well, I'm unknown. Nobody knows me except for friends and family. So if somebody's reading my blog, you know, are they going to stick around? Are they going to get to know me? And if they do, and I'm trying to sell them immediately, are they going to be repelled by that? Is that going to be something they want? So I was hesitant to release something and sell it straight away, which a lot of marketers will tell you that's wrong. You want to sell right away. But again, I had that dilemma. At least personally, I had that dilemma. So I went about and I created a Pay What You Want. Essentially, I used Pay What You Want to sell my ebook. I said, here it is. It's free if you want it. But if you'd like to contribute to my art, I really appreciate that. And it was just as simple as that. And which I think makes that figure $500 more impressive in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. From a small audience, apparently, of very passionate readers, I made a quite a bit of money that I don't think I would have made had I sold it with a fixed price.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of reasons for that. But I say now, so I say all that to say this. I then wrote an article kind of about my experience on ThinkTraffic. It received a decent amount of attention. I got a lot of feedback from people asking me more questions about it. They wanted, well, first the feedback was, this is excellent. It's inspired me to try this out. And the second thing was more questions about Pay What You Want and how it works,
yeah.
Which, again, I took that input and I took those questions and I said, well, I know enough myself and I've talked to enough people about this process. I'll just put together a simple course that will help people put this to work in their business, use it to sell their art, to turn their hobby into a money-making endeavor, and that's kind of what I'm doing right now. And so I would say, I guess, to sum it up with the basic question was, how common is it for people to have fear to put their stuff out there? I think it's actually very, very common based on the feedback I got from that one post. And as I dug in to do research, I'd say that's one of the major fears, is people are uncertain about their abilities. And they're uncertain if they don't have a proven track record. They're not sure if they, you know, should be allowed to sell their stuff, which I think is crazy, mm-hmm. right? So I think Pay What You Want takes away that fear from the producer standpoint. So if I'm a writer, if I'm a creator, it takes away the fear of saying, well, I'm not, I don't have to have that fear, you know, will people reject me? And then it also takes away a lot of the hesitation on the buyer side.
Yeah.
So now they're not quite as hesitant to just ignore it because you're an unproven entity. They'll be like, oh, well, it's free. I'll take it. And if I like it, maybe I'll contribute more later. Or there's just a lot of people
yeah.
I found are just like, well, here's $5. You know, you're asking to support your art. Here's a coffee. And it's like that simple. And it's really powerful, though, too. So I think that is a great system for new creators, but also established. There's a lot of statistics to back up that proven entities that use Pay What You Want have increased revenue by upwards of 60% using it for certain products, which is pretty incredible.
It's interesting. I was just thinking back to years ago, I guess when I was still a student, going to theater performances where a lot of the theaters, this was in Toronto at the time, on Sunday afternoons, they had what they called Pay What You Can. And so I would go and then just pay what I felt I could afford and more if I really liked the play. So it's the same kind of idea.
Absolutely, 100%. You know, and it's interesting because it takes a lot of it takes from that idea of it's almost donation based, but it's definitely different. It's not necessarily asking for a donation. It's just saying, hey, you know, the value is discretionary. If you find value
yeah.
in this,
yeah.
do you tell us what it is and you decide. And I think there's a lot of power in that, too. Mm-hmm. I was speaking to Ryan Delk of Gumroad in an earlier podcast that I did on my show, In the Trenches, and he was saying, and I thought it was really extraordinary when he mentioned it, he said that people underestimate the excitement of their top 1 to 3% of their audience.
Mm-hmm.
So that the top one, you know, the top 1 to 3% of your audience is very, very excited about what you create. And most producers, most creators underestimate that. And so when you put a fixed price on something, it basically forces them to pay maybe even less than they would be willing to pay. But you give them the option to pay more, and they will possibly pay more. And I found that to be the case, which is, again, just extraordinary and kind of unintuitive. You wouldn't think so, but that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, people are paying where they perceive value, so that totally makes sense. And I think it was through that Think Traffic article that I first came across you. Tell me about the Seth Godin connection. How did that come about? I mean, obviously, being able to use his name helps give you a certain amount of attention right off the bat. So how did that happen?
Yeah, good question. So I went to, I guess it started a little ways back when I was deployed, actually, in Iraq. I remember when I was doing some, you know, between missions, I would be, you know, on the internet, you know, trying to distract myself for a little bit. And I found, my brother sent me some Seth Godin articles. I was like, oh, this is really interesting stuff. Like, this is really compelling. And so I started reading, and I went in and basically read, like, all his archives, like the last, I don't know, 8 years or whatever that he's been writing. And I was like, this is really good. I bought a lot of his books. So I became, a Seth Godin super fan. And that was a few years ago now. And after that, I emailed him, connected with him a little bit, started talking to him back and forth on email. And then when he had a conference in in the fall of 2012, I hopped on board. I was like, I had an opportunity to take a weekend to go to the conference and to take part in it. And what I did was I just took a ton of notes. I wasn't quite sure why I was there. A lot of people that were there had businesses. They had established businesses. A lot of them were writers. Some were actors. Some were artists. So it was a whole different slew of people. All of them seemed to, generally speaking, had something they were working on and trying to get unstuck, essentially, was the concept of the conference. But I just went because I'm a big Seth Godin fan. I just wanted to take part in it. I didn't really have a business at the time. I didn't have anything that I wanted to get unstuck. I just wanted to listen to what he had to say. So I took a ton of notes.
Mm-hmm.
When I finished that conference, I came back, and over the course of a month, I started to type out my notes that I had written down. It was over 50 pages of notes. I expanded on them a little bit with some of my ideas and how I interpreted them. And then I was just going to release it on my blog and say, here are some notes that I took, enjoy. But then I thought, you know, there's more here. There's actually quite a substantial bit more here than just a blog post. So I created a bunch of artwork for it. I packaged it all. I designed it all. And then when I was comfortable with the level of attention to detail I'd given it, and I was like, this is pretty complete. I like this. I sent it to Seth Godin, and I said, hey, you know, I created this after your conference. Would it be okay if I shared this and if I gave people the opportunity to contribute to my creative work? And he was like, go for it.
Wow.
He said it was great. He liked it. And he was, you know, again, it comes back to that idea of generosity. I think it's really impressive that he said that.
Yes.
So he was just as generous letting me do that. And he could have said no, and I would have been okay with that, too.
Mm-hmm.
I would have just kept it for myself anyway, or just shared it with people I know personally. But because he said yes, I was like, well, you know, maybe I'll try out this pay what you want thing. I'll let people have it for free. But if they want to contribute to my artwork, not so much for the product, but for my artwork, for what I do,
mm-hmm.
then they can. And it was the first thing after several months of writing, creating stuff, that I'd given people the opportunity to contribute to my work. And so, yeah, it started off kind of with a bang, having that name involved in it, because, again, people are pretty attracted to Seth Godin,
yeah.
And by extension, a book about Seth Godin is kind of interesting to a lot of people.
Absolutely. That's brilliant, and it's so amazing that he did agree to that. That's wonderful. You say that the conference itself was about getting unstuck, and I think that's kind of a bit of a theme of your podcast and your book,
mm-hmm.
as well. Can you talk a little bit about what are some of the things that typically get people stuck, and what are some of the things that you suggest for how they can get unstuck?
Sure. So the actual stuck part, and it's true, in my podcast, In the Trenches, I interview a lot of different creative people, from authors to entrepreneurs to really run the gamut. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I'm trying to pick their brain and I'm trying to understand, you know, what makes them tick, and then get to know about these people and these artists, these successful people, and what they've done to get where they are, and in so doing, to find out what hardships they've gone through and how they've gone through those. And then again, with my writing, it's the same deal. I think a lot of people get stuck in hundreds of different ways. And at the end of the day, I think a lot of it is mental. And it's not to say that they have a problem or anything like that, but that they've created these problems in their head and that are really essentially just in their head. And so instead of looking at something and saying, okay, this is the problem, let's lay it out, let's look at the potential solutions and let's play around with those and let's create like a tentative plan, if there's too much information, there's too many possibilities, there's too many what ifs, and it gets overwhelming, mm-hmm. and they either give up or they try haphazardly and they attempt a few things here and there, mm-hmm. and haphazardly and then half-heartedly too. They don't put enough effort to see it through. And so that's where the stuck part comes. Mm-hmm. They get stuck when they either they give up on just the too many possibilities, there are too many, essentially too many, inputs, yeah. into the system, right? And that's where the sticking points happen. And so it was interesting sitting down and listening to Seth Godin talk about it, because that's exactly what you heard from the crowd was, you know, they would ask, we had I think one of the days was essentially just an entire Q&A. Mm-hmm. And people just one after another, it was like a quick fire session asking questions and then getting Seth Godin's answers on them. And it was funny because a lot of the answer or a lot of the questions were all the same theme. It was, you know, here's this thing that I'm working on, and or here's what I want to do and I don't know how to do it, or here's what I'm working on, it doesn't seem to be working. And it's interesting to hear Seth Godin respond to that, because a lot of it will be to dig deeper and ask more questions about it and then to give very clear answers. Well, have you done this or that, or, you know, what are you trying to do, what's your goal here? And then also to the point where he'd be like, well, you're thinking about the wrong things. So somebody, for example, I remember asked about a name that they should give something, and he's like, his answer was simple, it was, don't worry about names don't matter. And it's that kind of stuff is like really powerful. Like, people do get hung up on, what should I name something, mm-hmm. how should I design it, how should I look? And I'm the kind of person that does that too, because I'm artistically inclined to a degree. I want things to look beautiful, I want them to sound beautiful, but at the end of the day, most of that stuff doesn't really matter. What really matters is the content, yeah. and then getting it into the hands of the people that want to read it or consume it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's interesting your comment about you're being artistic and you're portraying everything as art. And I gather from what you just said a few minutes ago, you actually worked in the military for a while. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I graduated from West Point in 2008, and then I deployed to Iraq back in 2009, 2010. And so I actually finished up with my military career back in, it was recent. It was probably maybe like, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago.
Oh, really?
So pretty recent.
So when did you start all this other activity then, and the podcast and start?
Yeah, I started about a year ago. I started getting into the online, trying to learn online business and marketing and web design and these different things, fiddling about maybe like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So while I still had about a year or two left in the Army, I started messing around in my free time. And then about 1 year ago this month, or actually in September, that's when I started TomWorkus.com, my blog, and I finally just put that stuff out there. I gotten to the point where I was stuck. I kept asking myself, well, what should I write about? What should I create? What do I want to create? And these thoughts went in my head for over a year, seriously,
yeah.
before I was like, finally, like, I don't have to be clever here. I don't have to create a clever, you know, business website or clever, you know, name for something. I can just use my own name and I can start writing about whatever I want and we'll see what happens. And that was it. And I was finally like, I just pulled the trigger and I started writing. And so, as you know, one thing led to another. I started just creating content consistently every day.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing, again, it's just funny how this stuff, it is exponential, essentially, or it builds on itself. So the activity of every day putting work into something, it didn't seem like anything in the beginning, but now a year from the start, I can look back and say, wow, there's a couple books that I've written, there's a couple guides that I've created,
mm-hmm.
there's over 100 blog posts, there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of words of content, there's audio, there's podcasts. It's incredible, but you don't do all that in a day, and I certainly didn't know what I was doing when I started. I just said, I keep telling people, I keep preaching these ideas of start before you're ready, to so many people I know, and these ideas of courage, and I wasn't doing it myself, so I finally was like, okay, I'm going to start. And so that's where it all started. And so it's taken off pretty well for me since.
It's interesting because that helps explain to me, when I was listening to The Art of Instigating, when I listened to the audiobook, and there's such a strong military theme running through that. So I guess that comes partially then from your own experiences in the military.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess you could say that's my angle on the whole
sure.
concept of everything that I write about is it's partly my own experiences, but it's also inspired by other artwork that and other pieces of art that draw from the same
mm-hmm.
Source material, like Stephen Pressfield's
yeah.
War of Art.
Yes.
I was very inspired by that book, and I was like, you know what, this is interesting because I was in the Army and I experienced war, and why don't I write about these same things in the same context if I can, if I have the ability? And I was like, and again, that was kind of what helped me refine my ideas and my vision of what I wanted to do, was using stuff like, okay, Stephen Pressfield's War of Art inspired me, Seth Godin's Poke the Box inspired me, and all. I just look at the things that really inspired me. I said, can I create something like this, not to be it, but to be its successor,
mm-hmm.
to be something that takes the idea and pushes it further?
Mm-hmm.
So it's that whole concept of art being what is the word that Austin Kleon of Steal Like an Artist uses?
Okay.
Combinatorial, if you will.
Right.
I think it's combinatorial. So it's a combination. So you take from other artists, you combine it with other things, and then you produce something new. And that's all it is. It's not
yeah.
it's not that everything has to be unique. It's that you want to create something better from what's already out there. So that was kind of my philosophy going in.
It's interesting. I did an interview a little while ago with David Usher, musician out of Montreal, and his comment, he said, all artists and all entrepreneurs are thieves. And what he meant by that was exactly what you're saying, that nothing is really new. We're all taking elements of what we see around us and from those elements, putting them together in new and creative ways. And that's really what both art and entrepreneurship are all about.
Exactly. And so and that's a kind of coming back to that topic of being stuck. I think a lot of people get stuck because they feel the pressure to be unique, or they feel the
yes.
pressure to stand out. And you don't have to stand out, and you don't have to be unique, at least conventionally speaking. All you have to do is find what you're excited about and see who's done it, who inspires you, who's gotten you excited about the topic. Look at what they've done, take from them, and do something better than what they've done. So build on what's out there. Don't try to be unique. Just make something better. I think that takes so much pressure off of people.
Except isn't that giving you a lot of pressure if you're saying you want to be better than Seth Godin?
Maybe it does. And I guess I don't – that's a good point. And I guess I don't mean it that way in terms of I don't want to be better than Seth Godin. I'm different than Seth Godin.
Right.
But I think I can take the ideas and using my own personal experiences and all the different books and experiences that I've had. So, again, we're combining Seth Godin with Stephen Pressfield with a lot of, I read a lot of philosophy growing up, and I've read a lot of history books.
Yeah.
And I obviously have my background is in geography, human geography, kind of like sociology. So I'm combining all these different things into something new.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not to be the next Seth Godin. It's not even to be better than Seth Godin. It's to be, the best that I can be.
Of
first of all, it's to be my best. And then it's to take what's out there and to see, can I add to this?
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully it's for the better, because you obviously don't want to be worse than what's out there.
Yes. Yeah. So far for you in this journey, what have been your biggest challenges?
The hardest thing, I think, for me is overcoming those same enemies inside our own brains, right? It's that the resistance that Stephen Pressfield calls it, or the lizard brain,
mm-hmm.
since we're talking about Seth Godin as well. It's those fears that we have in our own heads. It's that internal monologue that's self-defeating.
Yep.
And I have that too on a daily basis. To be honest with you, it's crazy, and I think a lot of people do. Maybe not on a daily basis, not as much as me. Maybe I'm probably overly critical of myself, but that's the hardest part. Once I get over myself, I find life is a lot simpler and a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just very critical of the things I'm doing. So the hardest part has just been getting over myself every day, to just sit down and say, stop comparing myself to others, or stop judging myself. And to just create things that other people find value in.
Yes.
And if I can keep doing that every day, that's all that matters. And I know that in the end of it, I'll be better off for it, and that I'll get where I want to go, which is just to continue doing, essentially, which is interesting when you think about it. It's to do what I'm already doing. Mm-hmm. It's to write what I'm writing. It's to continue to create. It's and to continue to support myself with those creations.
Right.
So that's been tough. And then secondary on the actual like business side of things,
mm-hmm.
is actually managing so many things as a single entity right
yes.
now. So I run Insurgent Publishing. While I outsource pieces of it,
mm-hmm.
almost all of it's on me. So I'm the publisher. I'm the CEO. Mm-hmm. I'm the CFO. I'm the
yes.
COO.
Yes.
I'm the I'm the lead editor. I'm the content marketer. I could go on. I'm the secretary. I'm the run boy. Like I go. I do the errands.
So how many so hours a day do you work?
Ah, oh, geez. It's tough to say. I feel like I work kind of nonstop.
Yeah.
Like I don't necessarily take days off because I'm always doing something every day, but I enjoy it. So I probably say I work maybe anywhere from 6 to 10 hours a day. I mean, it's tough because it's just tough to say, but I work a lot, I guess you'd say probably more like 10 hours a day, probably about 7 days a week.
I totally relate to that. At times I've had more staff, at times I've had less, but I find that I'm always have this 300 item to-do list. I have way more things that I feel I need to be doing or ought to be doing or want to be doing than I possibly can at any given time. I get a suspicion that you may have dealt with this issue as well, and I'm curious about how you deal with it.
Yeah, I do. I deal with it on a daily basis, along with the fears. I've got a list of 1,000 things that need to get done. And the best way I found to accomplish those things is not to work too much. It's not to focus on planning and organizing,
mm-hmm.
but to sit down and just start doing them one at a time. So the best way I found to manage my time is to start taking action. As simple as that sounds, or as confusing as that might sound, because what you'll find is that I found in my own experience is that I spend too much time planning something and then I never get around to doing it.
Yep.
And I think the same can be said for a lot of people.
Yep.
People spend a lot of time organizing. They want to find a new utility or tool that helps
oh, yeah.
them organize. Yeah, mm-hmm. that helps them organize better, or that helps them manage their time better, or they read a new book on how to overcome procrastination. It's like, do you notice the subtle trend here?
Yeah, well, yeah.
And so at the end of the day, exactly. So at the end of the day, I think it just comes down to taking action on one or two things a day.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get those done, progress to the next thing if you have time. So I have a list, obviously, of things that I do. And really, I just kind of skim over the list. I say, these are the things that are pressing. These are the things that are coming up in the future that I need to do. I'm going to start with, I kind of feel like this, so I'm going to start working on this. If I lose steam on one project, then I move over to another one,
mm-hmm.
which I found is helpful because I work on so many different things that it's tough to get entirely burned out because I always have something new I can work on. So,
yeah,
that's my solution to it.
I totally hear you about the constantly trying a new tool or reading a new book. And I tend to do
yep.
the same thing even just with, I mean, I've started work on my second book and it's the same thing where I keep feeling, well, I've got to read that next article. I've got to do that little bit more research. And there's this other voice inside me saying, just stop with the reading and start with the writing. Like, get on with it.
That's it. At the end of the day, start before you're ready. I can't stress that enough. So many people, I feel like, wait so long before they start. And at the end of the day, they already know what they need to get started.
Mm-hmm.
They already have what they need to create and to start building what they want to build.
Mm-hmm.
They just, again, maybe it's based on their circumstances or environment or whatever it is. I'm not really too concerned with the reason or the excuse per se. What I care about is taking the action. And a lot of people just use these things to avoid getting down and doing the work and doing what they need to do to build what they want to build in their heads with their dream. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough though. It's easier said than done. And that's where the whole internal war comes from, right? Yeah. That creative internal war that we have, that we struggle with every day. It's those ideas of uncertainty, that we're not ready, that we're not prepared. But those are all a lie. It's not true. Mm-hmm. We are prepared. We are ready. If you're thinking about doing something, chances are you've been ready for a long time. And that's the only reason you're noticing now that you inspired to do something, because you've been ready the whole time. So to anybody listening, I say, if you're concerned about where you're at, just start. You'll be surprised.
The other thing that I found helpful is making a public commitment. So, for instance, I had been thinking for about a year that I wanted to start a podcast. And then I guess about 15 months ago, I just made a public announcement that by October of last year, I was going to start podcasting. And so I did. And I know full well that if I hadn't made that public announcement, I probably still wouldn't be podcasting.
Yeah, there's a lot of power in expressing your goals to the public.
Yeah.
That's for sure. And to telling your audience, this is what I promise I'll create for you. And then there's also a lot of power too. And then once you actually build it, say once you started your podcast, it's like all of a sudden, wow, I built this podcast. Now I need to keep doing interviews and I need to keep it going because it's been built. Right? So it self-perpetuates itself, which is good.
Yes.
And that's how empires are built. That's how, you know, that's how successful businesses are created. That's how Stephen King's are produced.
Yeah.
It's by doing one book at a time, by one thing at a time, and then it builds on itself, and all of a sudden you have your life's work sitting in front of you, basically. And that's what it's all about, I think.
Mm-hmm. Have you read Stephen King's book on writing?
I have not, actually.
Oh,
it's on my to-read list.
Yeah, it's fabulous.
It's amazing.
It's a really good book. Well, I think we've covered the main things that I was calling to ask you about. I was certainly particularly intrigued about the whole pay what you want model. That's definitely something I think I'm going to try out, because it just, to me, makes so much sense. And I think I see an element of that with the whole upsurge now in Kindle publishing, that, you know, whether it's pay what you want or the people saying, you know, pay $2 or $3, it's still saying, okay, I'm going to throw my work out there and see what the reaction is. And I'll worry about getting money in based on people's perception of value over time.
Exactly. I consider my experiment with Pay What You Want a resounding success. Again, $500 you're not going to live off of, but $500, again, is a testament to saying that here's something that I created that people want to read, and that so far the reviews have been positive across the board. So that's the real success to me. It's I just learned what my audience wants. I learned what people enjoy. And now I can take that and build it into something better in the future with a new product or a new book. And then the whole pay what you want is wonderful too. I really do love it. And I'll definitely keep you posted when I come out with the guide / e-course, which, not ironically, will be pay what you want. So.
Well, I'm looking forward to that, Tom, and I'm looking forward to continuing to watch you progress. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
If you're interested in learning more about Tom, about his Join the Resistance podcast, about some of the books we discussed in this interview, I will put all those links in the show notes. So I'd really recommend you hop on over to frankonlinemarketing.com/show and have a look at the notes from this episode. I think perhaps one of the most important lessons that comes out of this is just to start before you're ready. It's too easy to wait and wait and think you need to read one more article or do one more thing and never get on with your life. And this is a constant struggle that I have, because I am a bit of a perfectionist and I constantly want to learn more. But when you're working in a field like digital marketing that is changing day by day, you'll never know it all. And sometimes you just have to turn on the mic, let the podcast rock and roll, write the words, and get the book out there. So I hope that you will find that this interview has inspired you to move forward with whatever it is that you're working on. One of the great things that has happened in my life lately, because I took the step of pressing the go button and getting myself out there, is that I've got some incredible interviews coming up for you over the next few weeks. As you may have heard last week, I did an interview with John Morrow, who is probably the world's best blogger, certainly a great advisor on how you can build your blog and how you can write better. I'd highly recommend you hop on over to Frank Online Marketing and check out the John Morrow interview. And others coming up over the next little while include Jay Baer of Convince and Convert, James Schramko of Superfast Business and the Freedomotion podcast, Jeffrey Hazlett, who's an ex-Kodak VP Marketing and host of the popular television show C-Suite. Ray Adia, Fearless Frontline author, a book about how to empower your frontline employees and make changes throughout your organizations to make that really stick. And a bunch of really interesting clips with people like Danny Brown and others who I chatted with recently in Toronto at the Business to Business Marketing Conference and the Mesh Marketing Conference. So if you've got thoughts on which of those you'd like to hear first, pop me a line at tema@frankonlinemarketing.com. And if you've got thoughts for other people you'd like me to interview too, please tell me who they are. If you've got any feedback about this episode or any of the others, I would really love to hear from you. You can always email me, Tema, T-E-M, as in mother, A, at frankonlinemarketing.com, or you can call me toll-free at 1-866-544-9262, or you can always drop by the website and leave comments there. And if you are enjoying this show, I'd be really grateful if you'd put in some feedback at iTunes or at Stitcher or wherever else you found this podcast. And please tell your friends about it. Chat with you next week. Bye.